Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts of author readings and library events, a series of readings, performances, lectures, and discussions. Library podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation. To learn more about our programs and podcasts, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the Library Foundation support the Seattle Public Library, go to foundation.spl.org.
Good evening. Thanks for waiting. I'm Chris Higashi, Program Manager of the Washington Center for the Book at the Seattle Public Library. Welcome to tonight's event with Rafe Esquith. Always a tremendous pleasure to welcome him back to the library. So first we thank Elliott Bay Book Company, our co-presenters this evening, the Seattle Times for generous promotional support for library programs, our author series sponsor, Gary Kunis, and finally, this event is supported by the Seattle Public Library Foundation. It's private gifts to the foundation by thousands of people that makes possible hundreds of free library programs every year. So to foundation donors here with us tonight, we want to say thank you very much for your support. And also, thank you, Seattle voters, for passing the library levy. Here's Rick Simonson to introduce the rest of the program.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you all very much for being here tonight. As Chris said, we are delighted to be having Rafe Esquith here. And this is the third time in about 5 or 6 years that he's come around. And it sort of, to many, would seem like an unusual time of year to be having talks, books about teaching in schools right at the time of year when so many people don't want to be thinking about those things. But in his having come here for his earlier books, in fact, the first time he came was with some of the students for Teach Like Your Hair is on Fire, and then for Lighting Their Fires. But because he is a working teacher, this is the time of year that Rafe Esquith can make the rounds and talk about the things he's been writing about in these extraordinary series of books, which also include a book more on educational policy, a book called There Are No Shortcuts, or it's a book about sort of a larger way about, different way about education. But tonight is actually a night close to home for so many, which is for this new book, Real Talk for Real Teachers, which then has the subtitle, Advice for Teachers from Rookies to Veterans, and then in quotes, No Retreat, No Surrender. It's a book very much for teachers in the day-to-day, the short-term and sort of how to get through the days and years, but then the longer term of what it is to have teaching as a calling, as a long-term career in country and in a society that so much of what happens, that what education involves seems to be looked at almost, it's given lip service, but not whether the things that teaching and education really impart seem at odds with a short-term, let's move this thing along society and with all sorts of other distractions. I'll get out of the way with this because he will talk about, and he's a delight to hear. But I thought I would also say, in having him here tonight, he is the author of these books. I usually don't have these things written out, but because of the various distinctions and honors he's received, Rafe Esquith is the only teacher who has ever received the National Medal for the Arts. He also his work as goes around the world. He's Queen Elizabeth ordained him as a member of the British Empire. He's received the Compassion Action Award from the Dalai Lama, the American Teacher Award, the Parents Magazine As You Grow Award, Oprah Winfrey's Use Your Life Award, and the Kennedy Center's Sondheim Inspirational Teacher Award. These come from his having done this work, which he continues to do 31 years along at Hobart Elementary School in Los Angeles. So tonight he'll talk about Real Talk for Real Teachers, following his time, which can include questions, and then he'll sign copies of his books, which we have over at the table. All of his books are over there, and then you'll get a chance to follow up and continue the conversations, which this book is certainly a big big part of generating many conversations and touches on many conversations. So with that, for the Seattle Public Library and Elliott Bay, we all thank you very much again for being here tonight, and I'll ask you please join in welcoming back to Seattle Rafe Esquith.
Thanks, everybody. I'm really sorry you had to hear about all those awards. I just like to say that my name is Rafe, and I am a public school teacher. You see, that's what I do for a living. I will be starting my 31st year in a couple of weeks, and I'm not going anywhere. And I really wrote this book because, from my point of view, good teachers are becoming an endangered species. Every day I look at the internet, and there are blogs and videos from really good people who are leaving the profession and basically saying they can't take it anymore. And these are not whiners and quitters. These are people who are really good at what they do. And for 15 or 20 or 25 years, they've been changing lives. And they are so disgusted with the system that they basically say, I can't do this anymore. This book almost wrote itself because I get thousands of letters a week from teachers all over the world. And whether they're writing me from Brazil or China or Missouri, it's really the same story. They're disgusted with standardized testing. They are disgusted that they are being told that all they are supposed to do in a classroom, have you done the Common Core yet, is to prepare their children for the international workforce, and that real learning and scholarship has been replaced by simply a regurgitation of facts on a standardized test at the end of the year, as though that's supposed to show that children are learning something. And real teachers know that's not true. So I divided the book into three sections. And the first section is called Once Upon a Time. And it's directed at young, new teachers. Do we have any new teachers here tonight? Are people going to be teachers? Okay. For the veterans, spare me 2 minutes. A little advice for the young teachers. If there's one thing I want you to remember, and I write this in the book, if no one's told you this so far, you're going to have bad days. You are. You're going to have terrible days. You're going to have days where you do everything right. You've prepared your lessons, and you've consulted with your colleagues, and you've taught with passion, and you've cared about every kid in your class, and you still have a terrible day. Because no amount of preparation, as the veterans will tell you, can prepare you for what can go wrong in a classroom. It's just impossible. And then you go home and you cry. And you think maybe law school would have been a better option. And then to steal your resolve, this is the worst part, you put on the latest Hollywood movie about teachers, and the teacher saves everybody. And everybody passes the test. And they all win the big game, and they all love the teacher, and you cue the music. And I want to tell you, that's a Hollywood movie. So young teachers, please listen to this. If you only get one thing from this evening, I'm one of the most honored teachers in the world, and I have bad days all the time, and I fail all the time. There are so many students I don't reach, despite, believe me, Herculean efforts, because there are issues of poverty and dysfunctional families, and the fact that we are in a culture where the Kardashians are more important and more valued than people trying to cure cancer. When you have your bad days, young teachers, you're not a bad teacher. It's a reminder that this is a really hard job. In my classroom at Hobart School, I'm trying to teach kids to be honorable in a world that isn't. I'm trying to teach them to be decent to one another in a world where indecency is not only surrounding them, it's celebrated in the media. This is what we're up against. But what the good news is, when you have your bad days, if you don't give up, if you work with the kind of heroes that are in this room, if you reflect on your failures, you can get better. And when you get better, teaching is a lot of fun. It's a glorious job, which is why I never leave the place. Nobody has more fun than I do every day, despite the fact that I have bad days. So please remember that. I do suggest that when you're a young teacher, you develop what I call a personal decalogue. 10 things you want students to know from being in your classroom. And I don't just mean the curriculum. Because one of the points of this book is I don't know any good teacher that doesn't want to assess their students. But the real assessment is not the test at the end of the year. It's where the kids are in 20 years. It's what skills have I given them that they're going to be using not just for my class, but for the rest of their lives. So, for example, and mine don't have to be yours, one of the things that I want to teach children, I want them to be organized. I teach them if you're organized, your life's going to be better. And in every lesson I teach them, organization is one of the themes. So when we play baseball, if you were to ask my students, what are we really learning here? The kids would say, we're learning about organization. You got to have your batting order ready. You got to know who's playing shortstop. You have to know where you're putting your gloves and bats and balls after the game so that they will be there for you when you want to play tomorrow. That's why we're organized. When we have our mathematics sessions, we have to line up our numbers carefully so we can understand the math that we're doing. We have to know where our rulers and protractors are. We have to know how to use calculators in an organized way, because if you push the buttons in the wrong order, you're going to get the wrong answer. Organization is a theme that's all day long in my class. And as you develop as a young teacher, what do you really want the kids to learn from you? I've listed my personal Decalogue. Doesn't have to be yours. But your first 5 or 6 years, think about, what do you really want them to know? The second section of the book is called Growing Up. Because once you have it down, once the kids are basically listening to you and you're getting through your day, you can phone it in for the next 20 years, or you can get better. And I have suggestions on a few things that I do that might, I hope, help you. There's lots of suggestions in the book, but I just want to give you two of them. There is a chapter in the book called Keeping It Real. People, for those of you who don't know, my students work crazy hard. I mean really, really hard. And I never raise my voice to them. And people know, you want to know what's the secret. And here's the secret. If you ask most kids in school, if you go up to a kid who's doing math or writing an essay and you ask him, why are you doing this? What are they going to tell you? My teacher told me to. It's assigned. I have to. I want to get an A. If I don't do this, my mother's going to kill me. Something like that. I teach my class a different answer. My class are called the Hobart Shakespeareans. And if you ask one of the kids who's working on math, why are you doing this? He will look right up at you and say, if I learn this skill, my life just got better. That's the line. If I learn this skill, my life just got better. I'm not working for a test. I don't care what Rafe thinks. I'm not working for my parents. I'm working for me. So, for example, we talked about baseball before. Again, if you ask the kids, what are you learning from playing baseball? One of the kids will say, well, we're learning about teamwork. You cannot win a baseball game by yourself. You have to play with your teammates. Even if they have different points of view, you've got to have this common goal of winning the game. And then I'll ask them, well, what in real life do you have to understand teamwork? And the kids will say, well, if you're a businessman, you've got to work as a team. If you're a nurse, you have to be able to work with others. If you work in an office building or a dentist's office, if you can work well with others, your life is going to be better. We talk about these skills all day long. We are working for our life. And remember, this is not a Hollywood movie. I don't explain this to them on day one, and the kids go, got it. It's every day. It's just a conversation we have all the time where I stop the class and say, let's back up for a second. What are we really learning here? The other one strategy I would like to share with you, people ask why my students behave so well, because they're incredibly well behaved. Before this book tour, we were just on the road for several weeks. And there's a whole bunch of students with just my wife and myself. We never bring chaperones. The kids never make any trouble. And people ask me, how do you control the children? To which I answer, there is no control. I teach my children self-control. But there is an activity that I want some of you to think about doing. When I meet my new class every year, I divide them mentally into three kinds of kids. And I have a chapter in the book called Middleman. Kid one, kid two, kid three. Kid one is the gift from God. Good morning, Rafe. I like you. And I like school. And by the way, my parents like you too. My parents always stop by the principal's office to say, thank you, Jonathan, for giving us a great teacher like Rafe. Here's an apple. By the way, if it's okay, I'd like to stay after school and clean the board. And my mom wanted you to know that she works at a dry cleaner's, and if you ever need your shirts done, you're covered. Oh, and by the way, I'm really smart, and I'm bound for Princeton, and on the weekends I feed the homeless. And I've had kids like that. And at the end of the year, they do really well in school, and people say, oh, you did a great job, Rafe. And I'm like, anybody who has this kid, you know, have any of you had a kid one like that, you know? Hey, it's wonderful. The bad news is, on the other side of your classroom is kid three. Kid three is F you and everybody who looks like you. I hate you. I hate school. My two uncles run a gang, and they have a message for you. If you ever give me homework, you're friggin' dead, and they're gonna piss on your grave. I've had those students too. Sometimes five or six at a time. Most teachers I know spend 95% of their time with kid one or kid three. You spend time with kid one because it's fun, thank God they get it. Or you spend time with kid three because they are destroying your life, destroying your class. And the other thing that happens, and this, I mean, I was guilty of this as a young teacher. You're desperate to get to that one kid that no one has ever been able to get to. And you want to be the one. But you know what? I'm sorry if this offends you. Maybe there's a reason no one's been able to reach him. Some kids we're not going to reach. I'm sorry. It's a fact. It's a fact. Doesn't mean we shouldn't try. Doesn't mean we shouldn't give up. But that kid should not dominate my day. Instead, I spend most of my time with kid two. They're average. No one's ever noticed them. He's not the fastest runner. She's not the most dazzling student, but they're capable. And because they don't ever make trouble, they sit quietly in your rooms, they just get passed through the system. I'm the first teacher that looks at that kid and says, I was reading what you wrote last week. Anybody ever tell you you're a good writer? You are. I can't wait to see your next paper. And the kid twos get so excited that someone has noticed, they start behaving like kid one. I can't tell you how many parents have come to me and said, what the hell did you do? Last year, my kid wouldn't get out of bed. Now they're jumping on my bed at 4:30 in the morning saying, Mom, I got to get to school. And they are so excited. It's the kid twos that create the culture of my room. So if there is a kid three that wants to make trouble, he's got nowhere to go. He's outnumbered by all these kids excited about school. A little exercise I do that you might want to try. After the first day of school, I go home and I try to write down without looking at my book all the kids in my class. All the kids I can't write down, those are the ones who get my attention. Think about that. Because who do we remember after the first day? The ones who know the answers and the ones who are beating the crap out of the kid next to them. But the ones that I don't remember, I figure maybe nobody remembered them. Spend time with them. Go after the middle, and everybody's going to win. You'll see. It really works. A question I get asked a lot, and you're in for a treat tonight. I'm all over the country, but because of the theater we have, you're the only ones who get to see this. I brought something kind of special tonight. How many here have been teaching more than 10 years? Can I see the hands? All right, young teachers, watch this. How many days, do you ever have days where you just hate it? It's just hard, or you're sad about losing a kid or an unfriendly colleague or a crazy parent. Has anybody ever felt like that? Or, because I know I have. People ask, how can you be strong after 30 years? And here's my answer. There's a chapter in the book called The Undiscovered Country. Especially now with all the standardization, I am begging teachers, find one thing you like about yourself and put it in your classroom. I think if you like to cook, you got to find a way to cook with your kids for a couple times a week. If you're really good at making quilts, for God's sake, start a quilting club. If you share yourself with your kids, one, you're going to have fun, and two, you're going to bond with some of your kids on a special activity which will carry over into other activities. In my case, I have these two great loves in the world, Shakespeare and rock and roll. And I'm not expecting anybody here to do what I'm doing. This is what I do. But after school every day, my class and other classes who want to come can stay to work on a Shakespeare production. It started 30 years ago. It was pretty raggedy. Now, people come from around the world to be in that room when we put it on. This year, we were visited by Ian McKellen, Patrick Stewart, and the entire Royal Shakespeare Company, Sir Ken Robinson, and everybody walks away going, there's nothing like this on the planet. But how did we get there? This is also in the book. Number one, I don't do this alone. I have collaborated with a team of amazing teachers. And that's another thing that keeps me going. I know we always hear about the bad teachers in school. We always read the articles about them. And there are bad teachers in school. But there are also amazing teachers in school that you never hear about. And these are the people that I choose to work with. So after school, my students put on an unabridged production of Shakespeare. It takes a year to put together. And keep in mind, for those of you who don't know, nobody at my school speaks English as a first language. 92% of the kids are below the poverty level. Only 32% of the kids at Hobart School finish high school. Now, can I ask, where are the high school teachers here? High school teachers, anybody? Where are my high school teachers? Middle school teachers? Let me give you a scary fact. I don't know if any of you know this. If you take the entire freshman class of college students in America today, the 18 years old, our best, they made it to college. They've passed their exams. They got through the application process. Do you know what percent finish college? Way less than half. It's like 26%. How could that be? They're smart. They know how to do this. Clearly, they're not ready. We are not teaching them real skills. Skills in problem solving, decision making, working with others. I realized that whatever club you run, whatever extra activity you do, forget about the activity. What skills are they learning? My students who do Shakespeare, almost none of them want to be actors. It has nothing to do with that. But first of all, as you'll see, we play a lot of music that I teach. I couldn't teach it 25 years ago. I had to learn how to play all these instruments. And as the kids watched me learn, I'm modeling behavior for them. They saw me go to experts. They saw me practice. They saw me struggle in the same way I want them to do it. I have to be the person I want them to be. Watch their teamwork, because we're going to show you a clip of the last 5 or 6 years of productions. And you don't have to like Shakespeare. Watch their command of language. They understand every word they say. Look at their teamwork. Look at their ability to take risks. You're going to see one scene where kids who are 10 years old strip down to their underwear in front of each other with no fear at all, because they're in a room that's so safe and so wild that they know they're not stripping down, their characters are. And that's the beauty of art. Now, our school this year just lost their orchestra and their librarian. But by keeping the arts alive in my room, I've kept myself alive, and I've helped the students learn skills that have gotten them through college. Look at their concentration. Do we have any music teachers here? Anybody? God bless you. Will you please remind anybody who ever thinks that what you're doing is invaluable? In a world where they say kids can't focus anymore, music is the great focuser. The kids you're going to watch a year before they were filmed did not play music. Watch how good they are. Now, one of the reasons my musicians are very good, get ready to get mad at me, I'm not a great believer in homework. Thank you. A serious issue facing our schools today is that our children are sleep deprived. It's leading to childhood obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and sometimes people who work with very poor children who seem to be behind, and I understand the mentality, we're going to pile on the homework, we're going to catch them up. I think it's a huge mistake. As a father of four, I know that when my kids were in the fourth and fifth grade, they needed to be in bed by 8 o'clock at night. And I see a lot of teachers who are keeping these kids up till 11 o'clock at night, doing mindless worksheets, and then the kids come to school as zombies. Because I don't give a lot of homework, what most of my students do at night, they play music. They practice their instruments. And they're actually learning a lot more practicing instruments. And the beauty of technology today is I can record pieces where when they go home, they're not practicing alone. They can have the whole band with them. They have all the parts except their part that they're listening to and playing along. So when they come back, you're going to see some really cool things. As you watch this piece, watch carefully. Not only Shakespeare, you're going to see kids play the sitar, guitar, piano, drums, cellos, flutes, all kinds of instruments that 25 years ago I couldn't do. This year, the accordion. It's a great piece with the accordion. This year, I have to learn how to play the bagpipes. I do, because we're doing cymbeline, and we're going to do Paul McCartney's song, Mull of Kintyre, which has, I see they had great bagpipe part. We have to learn how to play it. I have no idea how the hell I'm going to do this, but that's part of the fun. I'm going to have to go to experts, and I'm going to screw up royally, and so what? By the end of the year, they're going to be great at it. Anyway, if our crack tech crew can... We're going to have, for about 7 minutes, a lot of fun. You're the only people in America who get to watch this clip. It's not on the internet yet or anything. Spend some time with some very, very happy children. And none of the things you're going to watch are on the standardized test at the end of the year. Okay. Can we show that clip? Thank you. So the point of this is you don't have to do Shakespeare and rock and roll. I know this amazing teacher who loves to run. And every day after school, he runs with his class. And at the end of the year, a lot of his kids do the marathon. I know other teachers who do poetry clubs, chess clubs. Here's my thought that I want to leave you with. How many of you right now have been teaching for 10 years and you're frustrated with the system? If you're frustrated, can you imagine what the kids are going through? What's it like being 14 years old and going into rooms where they've taken away the fun of learning? More than ever, they desperately need us to stay put. We ask our children to commit to education, and what do they see? Teachers leaving, teachers moving around. Why would they commit? The reason my students are very dedicated, I'm not going anywhere. And in closing, and I hope we get great questions, here's a funny story at the end of my book, and this really happened. If anybody here, where are those young teachers? If you think society will ever appreciate the work you do, I don't think it'll ever happen. I really don't. I must be honest with you. I think we have to value each other and have the students value us because it's not going to happen. Over 20 years ago, I was chosen as Disney's National Outstanding Teacher of the Year. And I was asked to give my first speech. And it was really exciting. My God, they gave me a plane ticket. I was going to fly to Texas and give a speech in front of Teach for America. It was amazing to me. They're actually going to pay me a couple hundred bucks, which in those days seemed like a fortune to me. So I was taken to this beautiful home in a rich area of Texas, and they took me to the home where I was staying, and I thought, wow, this is really cool. And I saw these beautiful bedrooms, and they kept walking me through the home and walking me through the home and then out the back of the house, and I was taken to the garage where they put me on a 4-foot cot under a ping pong table with fresh cobwebs hanging down in my face. And as I lay there that night before my first speech, I thought, wow, I've just been chosen as the National Teacher of the Year. I wonder what the guy who finished second is doing tonight. But I thought, it's got to get better. So now, 25 years later, last year, I was asked to give a speech in, I'm not going to say the city, and I was flown in, and I'm waiting at the airport, and my ride arrives. It's a pickup truck, and I'm not making this up. The seat where I'm sitting is absolutely covered in discarded Burger King wrappers. I am sitting in mustard and ketchup. I'm taken into this very dark street, incredibly dark. And I get out of this pickup truck, and before I can say, excuse me, sir, the guy just drives off. I'm looking for a Best Western, Holiday Inn. I am not a high-maintenance guy. I'm really, give me a bed, a Coke and a hamburger, I'm good to go. I can't see anything. And I walk up this dark path, and there's a door, a glass door, with a sign on it that says, push buzzer for entrance. So I push this buzzer, and I hear a click, and I open the door, and I walk into this really dark hallway. It's about 10 o'clock at night, and I see a really old woman in this hallway pushing a wheelchair. And I see a security guard sleeping at his desk. And I walked up to the guy, and I said, excuse me, sir, huh? I don't know if I'm in the right place. Are you the teacher? I said, yeah, I'm the teacher. I'm speaking for you tomorrow. Yeah, you're in the right place. I said, is this a hotel? And he said, no, this is a retirement home. And I said, a retirement home? And he said, yeah, a retirement home. And I said, a retirement home? And he said, but it's a really nice retirement home. And I was brought to a room about 5 feet by 4 feet with an apple and a Coke and about a 4.5-foot bed, but no cobwebs. So I guess that's progress. And I think the point of the story is I'm not ready to retire. I think my next 30 years are going to be even better. At the beginning of the book, which I really wanted to call Teach Like Your Wife Needs a New Kitchen, my wife, who's really great, wants a new kitchen, and we figured out with my salary that if I can teach for 470 more years, she can get the new kitchen. So I think the point is, I think we good teachers, more than ever, we got to stay put, we got to be creative, step outside the box, get in trouble sometimes, because our students are worth it. And let's stay put and not go anywhere. And I really appreciate that you're here tonight. So if anybody has questions, I'm a real straight shooter. Fire away. Is there anything I can help anybody with? Oh, thank you. Does anybody have questions about anything? Please, fire away. Somebody asked. Yes, sir. Actually, you know, when you write for Penguin, they take good care of me. I'm actually at a nice hotel tonight. Thank you. Next time. Anything else? Yes, sir. Yep. The question is, I need more than cobweb beds. How do you survive? There are three things that have been essential to my survival. One, I have an amazing family. I wrote about this in the book. A lot of people who've read my books, because I write about teaching, don't think I have a life. And I have a wonderful life. I don't write about it because who'd be interested? But I have an amazing wife. I have 4 children, 2 grandchildren. All 4 of my children are college graduates. I have a daughter with 2 PhDs from Johns Hopkins, whose team just saved 1 million children from a form of childhood cancer. I'm not proud at all. I have a daughter who's a lawyer out of Duke. And when I was having my bad day, knowing I go home to Barbara and my kids, day's a good day. There's a chapter in my book called All for One and One for All. I work with some amazing people. My students can do sign language because one of my fellow teachers teaches them. I have so much help. We have so much fun together. You are surrounded. Look at the heroes in this room. This is, you know, you hear that teachers don't care. Here it is summer. And on a rare, beautiful night in Seattle when everybody should be out, and they're here trying to become better. So when you hear the teachers don't care, that's a lie. I've been doing this for 30 years. Most of the people I work with care a lot. And knowing that has kept me going. And putting myself in the classroom by doing something I love to do. It's not that I don't teach the curriculum. I do. One more survival tip. I have a chapter in my book called The Quiet Man. I don't fight with people, ever. Even when I want to. I know a lot of teachers fight. I get the righteous anger. But I don't think it helps my students. So if I can give you an example. My first year of teaching, I was shocked that when I went to Hobart, my students had never seen a concert. And in Los Angeles, there's this great place called the Hollywood Bowl. It's an outdoor venue. You see a concert under the stars. You have a picnic dinner. Great way to spend a summer evening. So my kids and I were going to go on a Saturday night. And they were excited. Their parents were excited. Everybody was happy. 2 days before, on a Thursday, one of my bosses comes in the room. And she said, Rafe, I heard you're taking the kids to the Hollywood Bowl. I thought she was going to thank me. She said, you can't go. I said, what do you mean I can't go? You can't go. I said, well, sure we can go. We've got the tickets. We've got the parents driving. Everybody studied the music. It's going to be a great night. You work for the Los Angeles Unified School District. You work for them 24 hours a day, even when it's a Saturday. There's liability issues. You can't go. And I said, thank you. You're absolutely right. The trip is canceled. I really appreciate your concern. But an amazing coincidence happened. Because the trip was canceled, it turned out that one of my students was a little girl who on that Saturday, it was her birthday. And since there wasn't going to be a trip, she decided to have a birthday party. She decided to have her birthday party at the Hollywood Bowl. And she invited her whole class. And she liked me so much, she invited me too. So rather than take my kids to the Hollywood Bowl, I went to a child's birthday party, which is allowed. And that's one of the points of my book. I'm the quiet man. I work around the system. And that's how I get away with stuff. I see really good teachers. Yeah, thank you. And by the way, I really like my principal. We're really good friends. He's the best principal I've ever worked for. Principals are under torturous conditions, too. You got to stand in their shoes. I walk by this guy's office every day. He's got the blood pressure medication, the Tylenol, the crazy parents screaming at him. So my job is to also make his life a little easier. And we work together on these things. I think it's worth it, especially if you survive your first few years. Trust me, man, nobody has more fun than I do. Can you imagine how much fun it was putting together Elvis with those kids? I mean, just a riot. Anything else? Yes. Okay, first of all, you're going back 2 years. Do you remember the kid's name? Luis. Not only did he keep his part, if you look at our website, Luis just led a trip with us. We just went scuba diving off of Monterey on a John Steinbeck adventure. Luis is doing fine. Make no mistake about it, though. I'm tough. She's been in my class years ago, and she saw that a kid wasn't doing a good enough job in the play, and I said, we might have to switch parts. And she was worried for him. I'm a real teacher. I don't always tell the kids, good job. I don't always tell them, you're wonderful. That's not true. Here's another shocking fact in my book, get ready to get mad at me. One of my favorite chapters in this book is called Thomas Jefferson's Great Mistake. Thomas Jefferson wrote that we're all equal. That's not true. We should be treated equally. We should have equal opportunity. But as I tell my kids, if you've ever seen LeBron James play basketball and me play basketball, we're not equal. He's better than I am. That's why he gets to play in the NBA. So if you want to play the drums in our band, I'll teach you how. But if you want to play in a show, you got to be good. You have to practice. You have to put in the time. And it's a very important lesson. In a world that says, leave no child behind, I'll leave you behind. I'm getting you ready for real life. Not everybody gets to get on the bus. I'm sorry. That's a fact. This seems like a nice crowd. I'm going to, can I swear, can I curse without offending too many people? Best line ever in my classroom. Time magazine was there years ago, and I had an adorable little girl. She looked like Hello Kitty. I'm not kidding. And the Time magazine reporter was talking to her in the back of the room, and this is a grown woman, fell on the floor laughing. And I walked over and said, what's so funny? Now, you were in my classroom. Did you ever hear me scream at the children or insult them or yell at them or go ballistic on them? Yeah, because I cuss in real life. I am absolutely the same person I am 24/7, always. I don't put on a show for my students. And people ask me, did I raise my children differently than my own students? Not in any way, 24/7. So this reporter asked the little girl, you know, Rafe is soft-spoken, but you guys really tune in. What's the secret? And she said, well, ma'am, you have to understand. Rafe doesn't yell and scream, but everybody in our class knows, don't fuck with Rafe. Because he will take you out. And I think one challenge to us is to make our lessons so exciting and relevant that the missing of the part is the punishment. The missing of the math, the missing of the exciting science project, being kept out of a baseball game because you told your teammate he sucks, You'll be taken out, and they know it. You had a question. Right. What do you do with sleep deprivation with other parents and when they've got the helicopter parents and the kids doing 75 things after school? It rarely happens in my room, but when it does, my response is this. Remember I said I don't fight? I will call the parent in and tell them one time, your child is yawning. I'm letting you know because I'm supposed to report to you what I see. I think he needs to go to bed earlier, blah, blah, blah. We talk about it, and I say it one time. If the kid still yawns, I've done my job. A doctor can tell somebody don't smoke. If he keeps smoking and gets cancer, you don't blame the doctor. One of my favorite educators was Confucius, who said all he was there to do was to transmit information. Now, you bring up a very interesting point, though, the technology. There is a very famous educator who gets a lot of applause for something he did. I don't agree with his style. He had a kid who was watching television constantly and went to her home and knocked on the door and took her television out of the room, carried it out, and everybody applauds him. I don't think that's good teaching. I think that's bullying. What I do that's harder is I teach the children to turn off their own television. Most of my students really don't watch any television. And not because I ever say don't watch television or we have a rule. They've got other things to do. And they actually start to trust me that if they get a good night's sleep, they'll be fresher the following day. We do talk about it, but I have a chapter in this book called The Soft Sell. In my younger years as a teacher, I would say, you have to do this. I know what's best for you. I don't do that anymore. I just give information. I think it's more effective in the long run. Yes. I have so many bad days in this book. I'll tell you my worst day. Worst day, I've had both my parents die. And I will tell you, the day I'm going to tell you was worse. Every year, I take a group of students to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. It's a wonderful trip where we work on life skills and managing money. Plus, they've studied Shakespeare for a year. We just came back from a couple weeks ago. You can see the pictures on our website. My students are legendary in Ashland, Oregon. Even the actors follow them around because the kids know the place so well. But a couple years ago, we had a trip. And when we go to save money, my wife flies up with the kids, and I drive their luggage 700 miles, put it in their room to save money, get it ready, and then after 11 days there, and it's tough to take care of those kids for 11 days, I drove their luggage 700 miles back, then spent another 3 hours delivering their luggage to every home, and as I was going home thinking another great year, my phone rang. And I said, hello? And they said, Rafe, it's Linda from the hotel. I said, yeah, what's up? And she said, Rafe, I hate telling you this, but we love you, we love your class, but I think you'd want to know. And I said, what's going on? And she said, one of your students stole from the hotel. I said, what are you talking about? A couple of the kids had ripped the hair dryers out of the wall and stolen them. If you know about honesty in my classroom, it's a huge issue. One of the two kids I had personally gotten a $100,000 scholarship for. I had worked with her for 4 years. I had gotten her braces and also helped her autistic brother have oral surgery, and I paid a month's salary out of my pocket to do it. When I called in her mother and said, this is very serious, her mother told me to go fuck myself and said, why are you so worried about stealing, Rafe? Everybody steals. That was a bad day. I didn't sleep for months. But I had to tell myself, you know what? Most of the kids didn't do that. And after feeling bad for a while, I had to shake it off because the next summer, I ran the best Ashland trip we've ever run. And nobody stole. Of course, I have bad days all the time. And one of the reasons I won't let Hollywood make the movie is because they'll lie. And I won't let them do that. Okay, unless they want to show me screwing up all the time, this book is filled with bad days. Okay, is that real enough for you?
An incident in class.
Okay. We're doing Shakespeare 1 year, and we've been at it for a couple of months, and a teacher came to me and said, Rafe, I've got a kid named Eddie. I know he's not in Shakespeare. He didn't join when he was supposed to, but he's told me he really wants to be a part of this. And I said, okay, sure. If you say he's going to have to catch up, no problem. This was around Christmas time. He came for a week of rehearsal. Then he came to a big party where I feed the kids dinner. And because he joined late, I ran out that night, went to Barnes & Noble, got him a copy of the book, burned a CD of all the music, printed out all the lyrics for him, and found him a part in the play. He spent 4 days with us. When after our winter break, he came to me with tears in his eyes and said, "I'm really sorry, I have to quit Shakespeare. My mom says I need to go home after school and be with the family." And I said, "Well, you know, Eddie, family first, I get it. It's been great having you." During a rehearsal the following week, I had to pee. So while the kids were rehearsing, I went to the bathroom. And Eddie was outside shooting hoops, eating hot Cheetos. And the only reason he wanted to be in Shakespeare was he heard it was fun. But when he saw that he had to work, he didn't want to be a part of it. To rub salt into the wound, you know, I talked to him with his teacher and I said, "You know, you lied to me, man, and I've been nothing but good to you. I let you in late, I really worked hard, and I want you to know it really hurt my feelings that you would do that, and I think it's wrong. I respect what you're doing, you know, you gotta do it, you gotta do it, but I've gotta tell you, you shouldn't lie to people. You really shouldn't do it." At the end of the year, his teacher gave him the award of integrity for her classroom. I think those are the little things that start to wear on a teacher. Not the suicide, not the missing kid, just those little defeats that wear you down. But again, I have to remember that there are 40 kids back in my room who do want to do Shakespeare, and they have to be given my best effort every day. But those things happen to me all the time. I hope that's more what you're talking about. Also, I have a chapter in this book called There's No Place Like Home. Just last year, I called in a mom because her kid was very lazy and wasn't doing any work. And I said, "You've got a really good boy here, but he's capable. Let me show you the projects the kids are working on. He's turned to no work. This is a 10-year-old big kid." The mother burst into tears and said, "Oh, my God, you have such an evil man for your teacher. I'm so sorry, my baby." And she put her 10-year-old son in her lap and started kissing him on the mouth. I thought it was foreplay. I've never seen anything like it. Did I do my best for the kid that year? I did. He had a pretty good year. But to be real, if you think I can help that kid as much as a kid whose parents are helping me, that's not true. And there are family situations which do make it more difficult for us to reach children. The nice thing is, because I've stayed put for over a quarter of a century, 95% of the parents will go through walls for me because they trust me. I hope that was a satisfactory answer. Two questions and we're done. Yes, back there. We lost our librarian this year. We lost him. What I do is, and again, this is just one teacher. For those of you who don't know, the Common Core has now explained that we need to be eliminating imaginative literature in our classroom and read more nonfiction with the kids. And this is from a guy who reads Orwell and Twain and Dickens and all that stuff with my class. What I think we teachers should be doing is reading with our children every day. Even if you're a science teacher, I think you should have a reading club at lunchtime. The days of sending your kids home and saying, "This is a great book and read it," I think they're over. There are too many distractions. There's too much technology. I read with my students every day. And what I did was I took all the books that have been banned and we read them. Because they're all the best books. And I really teach the kids that reading is not a subject. When we are on the road traveling, we still read together for an hour every morning. If you look at our website, you'll see us. We just read Alice Walker's Color Purple up in Ashland. We read all the time. It's the only way I know how to fight it, to let them know that your teacher is a real reader, and I love reading with you every day. And if there are interruptions in our day where we have to miss this activity because of an assembly or a shortened day or a staff meeting, the one thing we never miss in my classroom is reading. We read every day. That's the way I'm trying to fight that fight. It's not the only way. It's the way I've been trying to fight it. Last question. Anything else? Well, yes. One of the nice things about Masterclass, my last chapter, there's no question that in your early years, you're scrambling. I mean, we've all been there. There's an art project you promised the kids are going to do on Thursday. The school said they would have the construction paper, but it didn't arrive. So you go running out to the store at 10 o'clock at night because you promised the kids and you don't want to let them down. But you know that that one kid needed blue construction paper, and they're out of blue construction paper. So you have to go to the other store, but they closed because you got there at 9:05. We've all been there. What I found is that by staying put, I'm real efficient with time now. I do put in a long day, and if you've got young children at home, you got to leave at 3 o'clock. I got it. But what I would suggest is forget about the hours I put in. What this book is about is having your class do relevant lessons. And you can do that at 10:30 in the morning. You don't have to do it at 4:30 like I do in the afternoon. I'm asking teachers to stop trying to control their classrooms by using fear and punishment, and instead making the class so exciting that the kids control themselves. A lot of schools use uniforms. My argument is uniforms are about the outside of the child. I'm worried about the inside of the child. So let's not worry about my hours. Not everybody can do my hours. I would never expect them to. But I think we can have these real conversations with children and make sure they understand most teacher books is about what we're going to do. This is about why we do it. And that this classroom is about your life. And I want you to be successful, to use Shakespeare, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, not just for the test at the end of the year. If anybody comes up with questions, I have cards. Anybody who knows me, I answer all mail. I answer the phone. This is just the beginning of our relationship. Thank you so much for being here tonight. I really appreciate it.
This podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.